Current state on 90.5 WKAR. The War of 1812 ended on Christmas Eve of 1814 with the signing of the Treaty of Ghent. However, that didn't mean the end of hostilities. Current state Scott Pold is here with more on this important date in history. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mark. The Great Lakes and Michigan were prominent in the War of 1812, and the 200th anniversary of the war's end is tomorrow. As we often do on matters of history, we turn to Michigan State University historian Roger Rosentrater to learn more about the end of the war and what followed.
Clearly, this war had dragged on for 2.5 years by December of 1814. It had not gone well for the Americans in most cases, and both sides were really eager to try to end the war. Matter of fact, it's summer of 1814 when the treaty negotiations begin in Ghent, Belgium.
So what did the two sides bring to the table at Ghent?
Well, the Americans brought to the table the notion of ending impressment. I mean, this is clearly one of those ongoing issues. Anyone that knows anything about the War of 1812 says, oh, you know, the British were stopping American vessels prior to the war and taking certain sailors off. We go to the table saying, you must stop that. But curiously enough, the negotiators are told to pull that back and not worry. I mean, again, it gets back to the desperation I think the Americans were feeling about a war that was just going badly. And again, if you were to list off the reasons, I mean, there's a variety of things. Cost, for example. We know that New England is not behind the war effort. The economy is a mess. Very few battlefield victories. So the Americans are saying, okay, we want impressment ended, but we'll tolerate less than that. The British bring to the table the most important thing is a proposed Indian reservation. Now, they look on the map and they say, well, look, we got an idea for 250,000 square mile reservation, which would include the future states of Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and Michigan. And the American commissioners, according to one historian, were understandably stunned. I mean, it's like, you're kidding me. You can't imagine we could go back and sell this idea. Now, they estimate there are about 20,000 Indians living in that area, but 100,000 white Americans. So apparently when the American commissioner said, what are you going to do with the people that live there? Well, the British simply said, well, they can just abandon their lands and go away. Well, clearly that's rejected. So that idea is pulled back, and then at that point, talks stall.
Why would England want that?
You know, that's a great question, because the British had not been particularly good at worrying about their Indian allies after the American Revolution or in the 1790s when they finally left Michigan across the Detroit River and got back into Canada. They abandoned that idea, too. They'll come to the table with this idea, but as the Americans say, this would only be an armistice and not a peace settlement because the Americans would reject it.
So how were these issues resolved at Ghent?
Well, after the notion of the Indian reservation failed, the British came back because, again, they don't want the peace talks to fail. They come back and say, well, let's do an as-is, which basically said, you keep what you got and we'll keep what we have. Now, in that case, what it means for Michigan is that Detroit, which has now been reoccupied, obviously remains in the United States, but across the river in Amherstburg, at the entrance of the Detroit River is Fort Malden. And that's a British fort. It's in American hands, so we would have been able to keep that. But from a Michigan perspective, Fort Mackinac is still under British control, which kind of begs the question, had this idea worked, what happens to the Upper Peninsula? I mean, do they stay at Mackinac Island, control the fort and the fudge, and then go on to the Upper Peninsula? So the Americans say, no, we don't want to do that either. So I imagine it's a little bit of desperation where they simply say, well, then maybe let's push everything aside. I mean, the British have some problems as well, not the least of which is that they're paying higher taxes. You know, they've been involved in a war in Europe for a long time, and that had been preceded by the American Revolution. So it's like, we've been at war for a long time. We want this thing to end. Lord Wellington, a name that most listeners are going to say, oh, yeah, you know, he was the great British general. He was invited to go to the United States and win the war in 1814. And he said, you can't win this war without controlling the Great Lakes. Make a peace. So if Wellington says make a peace, the British finally say, well, look, we'll put all the demands aside. We'll leave them for some future commission. And that's how the peace treaty gets resolved. Back to the status quo as it was before the fighting started.
And this is one of those wars where word of the settlement didn't arrive right away to the troops. In fact, the British attacked New Orleans after the first of the year in 1815.
Right, right. And much to the horrors of the British soldiers that lost badly at New Orleans, it made Andrew Jackson a great hero. It worked out nicely for him and his political legacy after the war. But you're right. This settlement had been agreed on December 24th. The British immediately put their stamp of ratification on, and they even accompanied the American commissioners across the Atlantic. Remember, it took 5 weeks to cross the Atlantic to bring it. And they couldn't land in Washington, so they had to land in New York City. And it was like the war's over. Everybody's excited. And even when word got to Washington, the Senate ratified it 35-0. So it was time to say, hey, this is over. We need to move on.
Well, the people of Michigan are glad with the way it worked out because we got to keep the fudge on Mackinac Island and all that beautiful countryside in the Upper Peninsula.
We did. I mean, I don't want to start a notion that we're going to lose the UP, but clearly if we'd had, you know, lost Mackinac, who knows where things would have gone. But Michigan suffers greatly as a result of the War of 1812. Matter of fact, one observer at the time said, if you look about, quote, hunger, famine, ruin and desolation. That's all you see in Michigan. Fencing had been destroyed by occupying armies. There was a shortage of food and forage. Matter of fact, one reporter noted that people were eating boiled hay, just to give you a quick idea, because in those immediate years right after the war, things are really bleak. Not only is Fort Mackinac a mess when the British finally leave it, naturally, what do they care, right? They're leaving it. But then we get these surveyors come out here. It's a particularly wet 1815, 1816, 17. There's a lot of swamps. They basically say, hey, there's no land here worth even surveying, let alone cultivating. And one of the ways that we rewarded soldiers at that time was to give them land. And a lot of that land might have been given in Michigan, but the surveyor said it's not worth it. Matter of fact, there's one American general who says, you might as well just abandon this land. It's of no real value. But Cass again comes back and says, no, look, you just had a bad winter. Come back again, please. They do. Things improve. We get Mackinac back in the summer of 1815 when the British finally move to build yet another fort. And they build that fort, I believe, on Drummond Island. And they have to evacuate that because the boundary people come back and say, no, Drummond's part of the United States. So the British will reluctantly leave that area, but they understand that's part of the treaty. And it's not till the summer of 1815 when American forces are able to regain Fort Mackinac. That all aside, yes, we stay part of the United States, which is important, but there is a real positive. If any positive that comes out of the War of 1812 from Michigan, it's the appointment of a new territorial governor. William Hull had been our first territorial governor, and he had suffered badly as a result of surrendering Detroit in August of 1812. We get a new territorial governor in Lewis Cass. Cass is a New Hampshire native, raised in Ohio, had come to Detroit as a commander of a regiment of Ohio militia, and he stays on as territorial governor for 18 years and really becomes the architect of preparing Michigan for statehood, which happens in the mid-1830s.
We're talking with MSU historian Roger Rosentrater about the end of the War of 1812, 200 years ago. What did this mean to American-British relations, not just at the end of the war, but in the ensuing decades?
There still is a fair amount of hatred. You know, if you look at Michigan in particular, matter of fact, we'll still have an event in the late 1830s, early 1840s called the Patriot War, which is when the Canadians will decide, some, not all, but a few Canadians will decide that it was time to become liberated from their British oppressors. And we will jump at the opportunity to finally say, well, to the Canadians, have you finally woken up to the reality that the British are bad? You know, that doesn't obviously happen, but there is a period where we continue to hate the British. But the reality is that this is the last time we're going to seriously shoot at each other. Fort Wayne, if you're familiar with it, south of Detroit, is built in the late 30s, early 40s, a result of this Patriot War I mentioned. But 1817, we'll have a treaty that will demilitarize the border realistically. Each side will be able to keep one armed vessel on the border. Things get better.
There are a couple of other things that happen as a result of the end of the War of 1812 we need to at least touch on. One is explain what has come to be known as the Era of Good Feelings.
Well, by the 1820s, we're feeling finally relieved of this war that's been going on. We have finally forced the British back across, back into Canada, so to speak. And from a Michigan perspective, we had suffered from the 1780s into the 90s, and finally now we can look to a little more respect. Certainly one of the legacies of the War of 1812 is that even though we didn't have a lot of great battlefield success, we do get a little more respect with Europeans as a result of having been able to go toe-to-toe. Sometimes it's labeled the Second War of Independence. That's a bit of an exaggeration. I mean, we got real lucky to get out of this thing with only 20,000 dead and most of our territory, all of our territory intact.
The other thing we should talk about is the end of the Federalist Party. It had been considered to be unpatriotic because it opposed the war. This was the end of the Federalists, right?
Yeah, I mean, in the 1820s, they're going to become the Whigs. And again, it's a period of time where the Federalists will suffer. They were viewed as treasonous or viewed as traitors because they weren't supportive of the war.
MSU historian Roger Rosentrater, thank you. Always good to talk with you.
Thank you, Scott.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.